You're out there and you've just got one goal, and you want to catch the biggest and best fish, and you want to be better than everybody else. So that really keeps me focused.
This is Fish Tales, a seafood podcast. I'm John Sussman. When we consider family seafood dynasties, there's probably few as quintessentially South Australian or as diverse as the tuna fishing steer family from the west coast seafood town of Port Lincoln. They've been fishing 50 plus years across a range of fisheries, but tuna is in their blood, and that love of southern bluefin has been handed down generationally. The family's also gone on to build a diverse seafood portfolio, nurtured their own children into seafood businesses, and are looking to a future where the grandkids will be ready to take their spots alongside them. Being the prodigal son of the inimitable Hagen Steer, one of Australia's most innovative, determined and pioneering fishermen, would be daunting for most. Marcus Steer, however, has built on the family heritage, adding his rare natural gift for fishing to create one of the great fishing companies in Australia.
Hi, I'm Marcus Steer. I'm first and foremost a fisherman. I've fished all my life, and I've gone right through the evolution, so to speak. Done a lot of fishing in my younger years, and I still go tuna fishing today, and I still really look forward to it. My forte is looking for fish and finding ripplers and flattening patches and fish shining and bird patches and doing all of that sort of stuff. We're just getting ready for our tuna season now. But I guess I've morphed into the managing director of the Steer Group. When I left school, I went to Westminster Boarding School. And when I finished matriculation, I basically finished that year, and I jumped on a plane and flew over to New South Wales, and I got on our family vessel, the Leonard Star, which was a purse seiner over there. And we went tuna fishing over there, and I can always remember catching these massive, big southern bluefin tuna by line and by pole and by net, and they were the real heady first fishing days of my life. And there was certainly a lot going on. Then it was a lot more like wilder, you know, back in those days. And and you know, anything went back then, so to speak. And this year, in these days, everything's, you know, like a lot more controlled, and everything's a lot more environmentally friendly and sustainable. It was certainly a much more wild and robust back in the early days. I live in Port Lincoln in South Australia. It's probably the biggest fishing seaport in Australia. There's like a multitude of different fisheries in Port Lincoln. Like there's the rock lobster industry, there's the prawn industry, there's the southern bluefin tuna industry, there's the abalone industry, there's the kingfish industry over here at the moment. And I'm a director of on the Clean Seas board, so you know we've got a multitude of different sites here in Port Lincoln as well. So it's a real seafood hub, so to speak, in Port Lincoln. And you know, certainly aquaculture is the main driving part of the Port Lincoln economy, along with agriculture farming as well.
Founded by Hagen Steer in 1972, Steer Fishing is a family-owned company with a heritage of over 50 years fishing the vast open waters of the Southern Ocean off Port Lincoln. Steer Fishing is recognised as one of Australia's leading seafood companies, pioneering sustainability of resources. Specialising in the offshore ranching and grow-out of southern bluefin tuna, Steer are regarded globally as being at the forefront of change, constantly pursuing opportunities to improve the quality and value of their catch with a working eye to sustainability.
The Steer's history in fishing was, you know, like when Hagen first came to the country as an immigrant, and he was on a and a big cargo vessel and a training ship, which was sort of routing all around the world. He liked it in Port Lincoln, and he basically jumped ship and decided to stay without a passport. But that's another story in itself. And then he actually worked on the roads to start with, and worked for Cresco laying tar down on the roads. But after he did that for a while, he got into the abalone industry and bought himself an abalone license, and then became an abalone diver, and then he sort of started building himself up on the back of that. Then from abalone, he sort of morphed into prawn fishing. We bought a couple of prawn boats, and then he went prawn fishing, and then from that we got into fish trawling for a while, and then we got into the tuna, into the southern bluefin tuna fishery in Port Lincoln, and we've gone from there. But in addition to all of that, we also built a big vessel called the Tasman Dawn with a helicopter on it and helicopter pad and a very, very big boat. And we sort of took that into the Pacific, you know, around the equator. And we used to do a lot of fishing around there in the very early days. And we fished in American Samoa, and we fished in Pago Pago. And, you know, we went through a full cycle in the Pacific. We used to go to sea for 3 months at a time, and then we would bring in about 1,800 ton at a time, and then we would unload those fish in American Samoa. That would take about 3 weeks to unload, and then we would head back out to sea for another 3 months. So we sort of did all of that, and then in addition to all of that, we set up a fish farming business in Croatia. So I used to go tuna fishing here out of Port Lincoln, and once the fish were caught here, then I would jump on a plane and fly over to Zagreb, and then from Zagreb to Split, and there was a island in Croatia called the Island of Brač, and then we had a marine operations set up in Milner and a place called Sulpeta. And then we did a joint venture over there with a New Zealand-based company. And, you know, as a consequence of that, I spent the next 3 years over in Croatia fish farming over there. So, you know, we've definitely experienced all aspects of fishing, put it that way.
The southern bluefin tuna industry is intricately orchestrated and powerfully driven, fighting against the rough waters of the Great Australian Bight. It relies on an awesome demonstration of teamwork, with each step relying on the successful completion of the one prior. Years of experience, research and attention to detail feed into the practice, yielding a world-class premium seafood.
So what we look, and it's actually happening right now, right as we speak, this time of the year. You know, like as the seasons change, we're going from winter into a summer pattern. We're starting to get some really nice weather. They're sort of starting to get more of the southeasterlies. The water temperature's starting to increase. But you know, look, we've got two aircrafts, 3337s, and we've got a very good fish spotter called Philip Gibson, and we've got very good pilots as well. And so they're just starting to head out now. Like we've already done three or four flights, and you know, we've gone down as far as Portland looking for tuna, and we've gone as far as the Western Australia border, which is on the, you know, 129 degrees longitude. So right now the planes are out there, we're trying to find the best areas of tuna and the biggest fish where we can tow our cages to, and our cages will probably leave to go to sea on about the 20th. We normally go out there over the Christmas period and certainly over New Year's, but we will tow our cages out to the fishing areas, and then once we get out there, we'll use the aircrafts and spotter planes. We'll use our fish finding boats that have got crow's nests in them. And then we've got all, you know, electronic fishing equipment like sonars, echo sounders, And we'll be looking for the fish, whether they're like, you know, flattening patches or whether they're ripplers or whether they're colours in the water or whether the fish are shining fish or they're bird patches, or we find them on the echo sounder. So, like, it's quite an art to look for the fish, hunt the fish down and find them. It's like we're you know, hunters and gatherers at the end of the day, and you learn your craft over many, many years. But anyway, once we find those fish, the pole boat will find the fish, get on top of the school, and once you've got them, they're like sheep. They follow the pole boat, and you might pick up a few more catches, and then you can a few more patches, and then you can look behind the boat, and you might have 100 ton, 150 ton of fish just following the boat, following the boat. Then when you think you've got enough fish, you'll call the purseiner in, which is normally fairly close, and the purseiner will make a big shot around the pole boat, and then they'll purse the net up underneath the pole boat, and then you'll be, then the pole boat drives over the top of the net, over the top of the net, and then you're left, you know, with a net full of fish, and you might have 100 ton, 150 ton of fish in the net, and then you'll slowly close the net, and then, and in the meantime, the tow boat with the tow cage comes alongside the purseine. At the purseine net, and then we've got a hole in the net, and the fish are transferred from the purseine fishing net into the holding cage. And then once that cage is full, and it might take a month or 2 months to fill the tow cage up with fish, then the fish are towed back to Port Lincoln at a very, very slow speed, like one knot. It might take you a month to get to tow the fish back to Port Lincoln. And once the fish have been towed back to Port Lincoln, then we will transfer the fish into holding cages. And we do that with camera equipment, and we've got AFMA and ProTech down, and every single fish is accounted for. It's counted individually into whole holding pens. And then over the next 60-70 days, we will feed those fish, you know, with lots of bait fish and fatten the fish up, and they might have a condition index of 14.5. And once we've got them to a saleable size and fatness, then we'll start selling them into the various markets, whether it's Japan, whether it's China, whether it's new markets. We sell the fish fresh, and we also sell it frozen, and we get big Japanese reefer boats which circumnavigate the globe, and they come out from Japan, and they come via the Mediterranean, like, you know, Tunisia and places like that, and they come to Port Lincoln, and then they're big freezer boats with big minus 60 freezers on board, and the fish are all processed, gilled and gutted, head on, tail on. It's a very, very good way of, you know, getting large volumes of fish out of the water quite quickly, and then the fish are transported by sea all the way over to Japan, and that sort of keeps Japan going, and you know, the fish are sold into various supermarkets and sold into other destinations around the world. So it's quite a big operation.
Fishing families are inevitably not only multi-generational, but often intergenerational. For the Steer family, this included Marcus's sister, whose aviation skills became an integral part of the business operations.
Yasmin was our fish spotter and pilot. She used to work for National Jet Systems, and then I was skippering the boats and that. So in the early days, we used to work a lot together on that front, which was great, but we certainly invested a lot of money in, you know, like in going over to Samoa and working around the equator, around the zero line, and we were catching skipjack and yellowfin and northern bluefin, and we were fishing on rafts and pylons, and I've got one story I'll never forget it. We were fishing in New Guinea, and like in New Guinea, there are these certain sections where you can fish and certain sections where you can't fish. And there were these rafts, and we used to fish on these different rafts every night and do a shot very early in the morning. And we were fishing off of Rabaul, and you know, we must have just drifted over the line, and the fisheries came out, and anyway, as a consequence of that, we got into a bit of trouble. I got thrown in jail for about 3 days, and Brian Jeffries and Hagen had to fly over and get us out of jail, and we got out of jail and had to pay some money, and then we jumped back on the boat and went fishing again. But yeah, I'm not sure how much I can say and how much I can't say. But they were back in the very, very early heady fishing days, you know. I mean, like, we've had a great life and a really great experience and foray into the fishing business. And that was really good. I mean, even as a kid, we, you know, me and my best mate, we used to go mash netting in the bay with big mash nets and beach nets and purslane nets. And, you know, and back then you could do all of those things, you know, unregulated and things like that. But, you know, whereas these days there's a lot more rigors and a lot more disciplines in what you can and you can't do. And I guess that's a good thing, but it's also a bad thing as well. I mean, you know, back in the early days, I mean, fishermen were really fishermen, you know what I mean? And you know, and everybody, or certainly a lot of people, wanted to be a part of the fishing industry, a part of the tuna industry. Crews were good to get, and you could get a lot of people, and the crews were very competitive, and they were very, you know, very good people. Whereas today I feel the fishing industry is getting left behind quite a bit. There's not a lot of young people that want to be challenged or that want to go out to sea and want to go fishing and be in a different in environment. And that's sort of where we're lacking today. Our history is great, and we want to portray that to everybody. And, you know, we want to try to bring people along for the ride and get, you know, and create more fishermen and get more kids that want to be involved in the fishing industry. Back then there was a lot of money to be made, and it was seen as gung-ho, and everybody wanted to be a part of it. Whereas, you know, these days, you know, the kids are on the computers and things like that, and everyone's living a sheltered existence. And you know, somehow we want to be a lot more creative. I know Seafood Industry Australia's doing a lot of work on that front. I've always really admired the Norwegians and the Japanese, and I can remember going over to Japan many times, and we used to sit in the karaoke bars, and you know, there was songs being sung of fishermen, you know, of fishermen leaving their wives and their wives in tears, and it was, you know, the fishermen are really elevated and put on a pedestal. Fishermen are like doctors and lawyers and scientists. I mean, you know, and it's the same in Norway and places like that. I mean, the fishing industry is elevated in society, whereas in Australia, we've still got a fair way to go on that front, and you know, and hopefully we can, over the years to come, we can achieve that status. I mean, we don't want to be left behind in Australia.
The southern bluefin tuna industry has worked tirelessly to recover the population of southern bluefin tuna after years of unregulated fishing. From the implementation and management of a strict quota system to the use of cutting-edge technology, improved feed and post-harvest value-adding to make their fish more cook-friendly, the bluefin tuna industry in Australia has come a long way.
We've gone from an El Nino to more of a La Nina environmental weather pattern over the last 4 or 5 years, and for some reason that's changed the habitats of the fish. Also the drilling, the drilling for oil and that, and doing these seismic surveys since 2012, I think that's altered the habitat as well. So the fish have shifted more, in the traditional grounds we used to catch the fish, southwest of Port Lincoln, south of Streaky Bay, south of Ceduna, south of Western Australia, out on the continental shelf, right smack bang in the middle of the Great Australian Bight. I've caught a hell of a lot of fish out that way. But in more recent times, since 2012, the fish have been transgressing more to the southeast. And now we seem to be catching a lot more fish down off of Robe and Port Lincoln. Is it good? Is it bad? For the fishermen having to change our focus, looking at new fishing areas and that, it's probably become a little bit more difficult for us. I'm hoping in time when we get back to more neutral weather systems and that, the fish will sort of start to work back to the traditional grounds and areas where we used to first catch the fish many years ago.
The influence the Japanese market has had on Australian fisheries is mostly understated. The quality and consistency of many of the seafoods produced in our waters is a direct reflection of the impact the Japanese buyer has had on determining how a seafood is caught, handled, and even prepared. For a young professional fisherman, was also a place of immense intrigue and opportunity.
For me as a child, I used to go with my father to Japan when I was, 15, 16, 17 years old, and obviously going from Australia over to Japan and experiencing all of the treasures and pleasures of Japan was certainly a eye-opener for me. But one of the single biggest things for me that I can really remember is going to the Tsukiji markets, and is just no other place like that in the world. Just the sheer size and magnitude of those markets, it's almost like a tin shed over all of Port Lincoln, and just the multitudes of different fresh, like from fresh fish to frozen fish to live fish, and just how they look after their produce and product and all the variability they've got in the markets, and how the actual Tsukiji markets work, and going to those early morning auctions and building up relationships with the auctioneers over many, many years. That was a true pleasure. And then going to those little sashimi bars and just spending time with the Japanese people and our customers and all that. I mean, that's something, I will never forget. I love Japan for that, and it's really been a fantastic ride. It's been a fantastic journey. Obviously, earlier on there was, in the real heady days, we used to, like the prices were fantastic. We were getting like 2,500 yen a kilo for our fish, and the exchange rate was 65 to 70 yen to the dollar, and we used to get paid for all of our product in Japanese yen, and we were getting $1,000 for one fish, and we would be farming 30,000 fish. You know what I mean? So it gives you some idea of the value of the fish. It was really good. But obviously now the business is a lot harder. The exchange rates aren't as good. There are a lot of other companies now, a lot of other countries now supplying Japan with fresh tuna products from right around the globe, and that sort of put a lot of downward pressure on southern bluefin tuna, and that's why, I've been doing a lot of work over the last 2 years with Kin, and we've just got you know, two other fantastic companies with us, like the Steer Group and Blaslofs and Lukens, and we're working together for all the reasons that I outlined earlier, you know, like firstly, in a marine operation sense to really bring our costs down, but also to focus on new exciting markets and, you know, using the head to the tail, using every part of the fish we can, and, you know, trying to be a lot more sustainable and having a larger product range, and, you know, looking, you know, trying to sell the Saku blocks and things like that rather than just sell the whole fish to Japan. So that's very much my focus moving forward.
Ask any fisherman about their favourite story, and it's inevitably about how they challenged the status quo to find the best fish. Often these stories can end in tears or trauma. They can also end in an amazing success.
I was longline fishing down out of Hobart, and south of Hobart there's a big seamount down there, and it's called Matsaika Seamount. But just to give you some idea, I was down there fishing longlining, and we caught about 25 fish for the trip. The biggest fish was 200 kilos gilled and gutted, and at that time we got 21,500 yen a kilogram for that fish, and the exchange rate was 65 yen to the dollar. You guys can do the maths, but for that one fish we got $77,000. And when I bought that fish in, I jumped on an aeroplane and I flew over to Japan, and I went to the Tsukiji fish markets, and I watched that fish being auctioned off and that price that we got. And for the trip, we got about a dozen of the fish. But of course, that was the biggest ones. But there were fish ranging from 200 kilos down to about 80 kilos. But anyway, I flew over to Japan, watched that fish being auctioned, flew back to Hobart and went back fishing again. And then we caught some other beautiful fish the following trip. So that's one trip that really sticks in my mind.
Marcus Steer's enthusiasm for the future of Australia's fishing industry is infectious. Despite the many challenges, his commitment to the next opportunity is an inspiration to us all.
I still think we're in a very exciting fishery. I mean, you know, you've got to love what you do to be any good at it, whether you're a fisherman or whether you're anything else in this life. But I still see a lot of positivity in the tuna industry. I think, yes, the industry has gone through some hard times, you know, just with the fishery itself and pricing and things like that. But I can really, you know, that's happened over the last 2 or 3 years. I've certainly seen some uplift over the last 12 to 24 months as far as pricing goes and structure goes. And, you know, the weather's looking good. I think we should have a good fishing season this year. We've just got to, you know, be really focused. A lot of the, you know, like if you really look at the owners of the tuna industry in the past, you know, there was half a dozen very strong, robust individuals that basically owned most of the quota in Australia. They all lived in Port Lincoln. They were all incredibly passionate, innovative, and competitive men. And I think that worked well for the industry many, many years ago, like, you know, to get the industry to where it is today. But I think moving forward, the key is to work with the rest of the industry, and, you know, work together as one unit, you know, and look together in new markets, and, you know, on how we can value add our fish and what we can do moving forward, which is really going to create and add value to the tuna industry. So I think it's just a new era now. We've got to you know, we've got to focus on the positive ways we can change the tuna industry now. I mean, we just can't do the same things we've done in the industry for the last 25 years because that, you know, and you know yourself, John, that doesn't work. You've got to forever, you've got to be changing, looking at new ideas, a new way of doing things, new feeding technology, new ways of running your business. And I think what we're doing now with Kin certainly, we're looking at new innovative ways to run our business and ultimately be more profitable.
You can always pick a true fisherman. It's all about the fish. Solitude, the ocean, and the opportunity for that elusive great catch are a giveaway trait of someone for whom the hunt is their greatest motivation.
I'm fortunate because I really love the industry and I love a lot of things I do. I actually really love going out tuna fishing myself, switching off the phone and just getting out there, you know, with all of my staff on three or four, you know, different boats and really marshalling our staff and just really focusing on the catching operations because it's really weird. When you get out to sea, you that's the whole thing in your life. You don't speak to your girlfriends or your partners or anything like that. You're out there and you've just got one goal and you want to catch the biggest and best fish and you want to be better than everybody else. So that really keeps me focused. That's a real challenge in itself. And interacting with all your staff, which, you know, during the rest of the season when you're in, you might not see everybody. So getting out there and doing that part of the business, I really enjoy the interaction with everybody else. But on the back of it, when we're in, the traveling, going to Japan, Kin, the new relationships I'm forging, the new products we're doing, I sort of really enjoy that part of it as well. So I guess I'm fortunate as far as that goes. But, yeah, that'd be the areas I really enjoy.
Although Australia is a relatively young country with a limited history in fishing, we can be truly proud of some of our fishing families. The Steer family and their remarkable story give all in the seafood industry a reason to continually challenge the status quo, to always seek to do better and to never stop innovating. Marcus Steer and his family are a motivation to all in seafood, with his eternal drive for the next adventure and a deep love of fishing, a real inspiration. This is Fish Tales, a seafood podcast. A Deep in the Weeds production, I'm John Sussman. Follow us on Instagram at Fish Tales Seafood Podcast, or email us at fishtalespodcast@deepintheweeds.com.au. Stay tuned for more tales from beneath the surface of the seafood world every Friday on your podcast app.